Passover and the festival of unleavened bread. The chief priests and the scribes were looking for a way to arrest Jesus by stealth and kill him, for they said, not during the festival, or there may be a riot among the people. While he was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at the table, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very costly ointment of nard, and she broke open the jar and poured the ointment on his head. But some were there who said to one another in anger, "Why was the ointment wasted in this way? For this ointment could have been sold for more than 300 denarii and the money given to the poor." And they scolded her. But Jesus said, "Let her alone. Why do you trouble her? She has performed a good service for me. For you always have the poor with you, and you can show kindness to them whenever you wish. But you will not always have me. She has done what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for its burial. Truly I tell you, wherever the good news is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will be told in remembrance of her." Then Judas Iscariot, who was one of the 12, went to the chief priests in order to betray him to them. When they heard it, they were greatly pleased and promised to give him money. So he began to look for an opportunity to betray him.
Great War since it first began in 1950.
But before I left the state 6 months ago, she put me on my shoulders
and said, "Sophie, you must write to us as often as possible. Your father and I and your siblings will want to know how to pray for you." Mother is well known for her powerful prayers, and I need them now, more than ever. But it is still hard to know what to write to them. My experience here in France has been so far removed from life back in the farm in Kentucky. I haven't tried to make them understand because I don't know that it's possible for them to understand. Still, it's time to write them again. If nothing else, to keep them from worrying. In my previous letters, I've told them all about the beautiful French countryside surrounding our makeshift hospital. I've told them about serving alongside British nurses and French nurses and American girls like me. I've told them how nursing school couldn't have possibly prepared me for the reality of mending war wounds. I've told them how I get homesick and I long to hug them and sit on the porch with them on a warm summer evening. I've thanked them for their prayers and for their support as I went to nursing school. I told them how grateful I am that they do not discourage me when I signed on to leave home to be a nurse for our boys fighting in the Great War. But there is much I have not told them. I have not told them that conditions are difficult in the nursing quarters. I have not told them I've only been given the chance to bathe about once a week. I haven't told them about this. How can I describe what it was like the night it happened? What words can capture the feeling about going about your normal business administering medicine when a bomb dropped by a German Zeppelin shatters the wall? What language can I write to tell them that their baby girl has lost an eye forever? Can a letter home capture the hollowness of knowing I survived when four men in the war did not? During the 3 weeks I was hospitalized, Chaplain Duffy came to visit me. I had met him before. He's well known for his bravery. He frequently accompanied medics into active battle, praying for them and assisting them as they gathered the wounded and dying soldiers. He prayed over me, and then I asked him how he does it. How can he walk into an active battlefield? Father Duffy thought for a moment, and then he told me a story he heard. A column of infantrymen was sweeping up behind a battalion moving towards the front. A lieutenant came upon a young soldier, uninjured but weary, who had collapsed along the way. "Please, sir," the young man said, "I think I'm going to die." The lieutenant laughed and said, "You can't die without my permission, soldier, and I don't intend to give it." The lieutenant helped him to his feet, and together they marched along. Father Duffy said, I won't die until my commanding officer says I can. And while I'm not in a hurry, if he tells me to walk with those soldiers into battle while mortar shells are exploding and bullets are flying, I'll do it. You see, young lady, I let go of my life for the first time the day Jesus forgave my sins. And again, when I said yes to God's call to be a minister. And again, when I joined the Fighting 69th. And now, every day, I let go of my life afresh and anew. After all, God gave it to me. So it's only right I give it back to him to do whatever he wants with it. I asked the chaplain to pray with me, and after he did, he handed me a scrap of paper he'd gotten from a Bible professor in London. It is much easier to die than to lay down your life day in and day out with the sense of the high calling of God. For 33 years, Jesus laid down his life to do the will of his Father. And as it says in 1 John 3:16, by this we know love, because he laid down his life for us. And we also ought to lay down our lives for our brethren. If I am afraid of Jesus, if I'm a friend of Jesus, I must deliberately and carefully lay down my life for him. Don't be mistaken. I want to return home to see Papa and Mother. I want to marry and raise a family. I want to be the best nurse I can be. But I have a calling to fulfill. I will lay down my life and take up my cross. Dear Father, give me the words to explain this to my family.
On the first day of unleavened bread, when the Passover lamb is sacrificed, his disciples said to him, "Where do you want us to go and make the preparations for you to eat the Passover?" So he sent two of his disciples, saying to them, "Go into the city, and a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him, and wherever he enters, say to the owner of the house, 'The teacher asks, where is my guest room, where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' He will show you a large room upstairs, furnished and ready. Make preparations for us there." So the disciples set out and went to the city and found everything as he had told them, and they prepared the Passover meal. When it was evening, he came with the 12, and when they had taken their places and were eating, Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, one of you will betray me, one who is eating with me." They began to be distressed and to say to him one after another, "Surely not I." He said to them, "It is one of the 12, one who is dipping bread into the bowl with me. For the Son of Man goes as it is written of him, but woe to that one by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been better for that one not to have been born." While they were eating, he took a loaf of bread, and after blessing it, he broke it, gave it to them, and said, "Take, this is my body." Then he took a cup, and after giving thanks, he gave it to them, and all of them drank from it. He said to them, "This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many. Truly I tell you, I will never again drink of the fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new in the kingdom of God." When they had sung the hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives, and Jesus said to them, "You will all become deserters, for it is written, 'I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered.' But after I'm raised up, I will go before you to Galilee." Peter said to him, "Even though all become deserters, I will not." Jesus said to him, "Truly I tell you, this day, this very night, before the cock crows twice, you will deny me three times." But he said vehemently, "Even though I must die with you, I will not deny you." And all of them said the same.
Thank you. They went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." He took with him Peter, James, and John, and began to be distressed and agitated. And he said to them, "I am deeply grieved, even to death. Remain here and keep awake." And going a little farther, he threw himself on the ground and prayed that if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. He said, "Abba, Father, for you all things are possible. Remove this cup from me, yet not what I want, but what you want." He came and found them sleeping, and he said to Peter, "Simon, are you asleep? Could you not keep awake 1 hour? Keep awake and pray that you may not come into the same time of trial. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." And again he went away and prayed, saying the same words. And once more he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were very heavy, and they did not know what to say to him. He came a third time and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and taking your rest? Enough! The hour has come. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand." Immediately, while he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived. And with him there was a crowd with swords and clubs from the chief priests, the scribes, and the elders. Now the betrayer had given them a sign, saying, "The one I will kiss is the man. Arrest him and lead him away under guard." So when he came, he went up to him at once and said, "Rabbi," and kissed him. Then they laid hands on him and arrested him. But one of those who stood near drew his sword and struck the slave of the high priest, cutting off his ear. Then Jesus said to them, "Have you come out with swords and clubs to arrest me as though I were a bandit? Day after day I was with you in the temple, teaching, and you did not arrest me. But let the scriptures be fulfilled." All of them deserted him and fled. A certain young man was following him, wearing nothing but a linen cloth. They caught hold of him, but he left the linen cloth and ran off naked.
They took Jesus to the high priest, and all the chief priests, the elders, and the scribes were assembled. Peter had followed him at a distance, right into the courtyard of the high priest, and he was sitting with the guards, warming himself at the fire. Now the chief priests and the whole council were looking for testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but they found none. For many gave false testimony against him, and their testimony did not agree. Some stood up and gave false testimony against him, saying, "We heard him say, 'I will destroy this temple that is made with hands, and in 3 days I will build another not made with hands.'" But even on this point, their testimony did not agree. Then the high priest stood up before them and asked Jesus, "Have you no answer? What is it that they testify against you?" But he was silent and did not answer. Again the high priest asked him, "Are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One?" Jesus said, "I am. And you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of the power and coming with the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his clothes and said, "Why do we still need witnesses? You have heard his blasphemy. What is your decision?" All of them condemned him as deserving death. Some began to spit on him, to blindfold him, and to strike him, saying to him, "Prophesy." The guards also took him over and beat him. While Peter was below in the courtyard, one of the servant girls of the high priest came by. When she saw Peter warming himself, she stared at him and said, "You also were with Jesus, the man from Nazareth." But he denied it, saying, "I do not know or understand what you are talking about." And he went out into the forecourt. Then the cock crowed. And the servant girl, on seeing him again, began to say to the bystanders, "This man is one of them." But again he denied it. Then after a little while, the bystanders again said to Peter, "Certainly you are one of them, for you are a Galilean." But he began to curse, and he swore an oath, "I do not know this man you are talking about." At that moment, the cock crowed for the second time. Then Peter remembered that Jesus had said to him, "Before the cock crows twice, you will deny me three times." And he broke down and wept.
Oh, excuse me. My apologies. What's that? My name? Oh, well, it's... You know what? Just call me Simon. Hey, you look like a traveler. Were you at Golgotha today? I was. I didn't plan to be, but I was. What a joke. I didn't plan any of this. None of this was my expectation. I was his right-hand man. I thought I had it all figured out. I mean, I knew I never had him figured out. You've heard of him, right? The leader, rabbi, rebel. But he's more than that to me. You know, I was one of the first ones he asked to follow him, right? I got in on the ground floor. I laughed with him. I fished with him, ate with him. I sat around the fire with him. I heard him talk about his father, and I was the first one to get it. I was the first one to speak the truth that everyone else was afraid to put into words. He looked at us and he said, "Who do you think that I am?" I'll never forget it. He had the most curious look in his eyes when he asked us that, a look of excited anticipation to see if we got it. And I did. I got it. And I spoke it aloud. I said, "You are the Messiah, the Anointed One, the one sent to deliver us and fix the mess we're in." And I knew first. He told me I was a rock. And then the soldiers showed up and arrested him. I drew my sword and I rushed at them. That's what the Messiah's right-hand man does. Except he said no. He told me to put my sword away, and he healed the soldier I'd injured. I didn't understand. They took him away, put him on trial, beat him, crucified him. He warned me I would deny him. Oh, I argued with him, told him he was crazy, told him I'd die for him. But here I am. I ran. I fled the soldiers. I couldn't even stand up to a servant girl who said she recognized me. He was my friend. How could I have done that? I went back to the place where they put him on the cross. Like I said, I was there. Cloak over my head, making sure to stay in the middle of the crowd so nobody would see me. I couldn't even bring myself to look at him. But I could hear. Over the murmuring of the crowd, I heard his voice. It was weak, barely audible, but still familiar. And of all the incredible things I've heard and seen following him, the words he spoke in that moment topped the list. He said, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." And standing there, lost in the shadow of my betrayal, I knew I was one of them, one of the ones he was forgiving. He forgave me. I know it. But I just can't bring myself to accept it. Can I?
As soon as it was morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council. They bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" He answered them, "You say so." Then the chief priests accused him of many things. Pilate asked him again, "Have you no answer? See how many charges they bring against you?" But Jesus made no further reply, so that Pilate was amazed. Now, at the festival, he used to release a prisoner for them, anyone for whom they asked. Now, a man called Barabbas was in prison with the rebels who had committed murder during the insurrection. So the crowd came and began to ask Pilate to do for them according to his custom. Then he answered them, "Do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews?" For he realized that it was out of jealousy that the chief priests had handed him over. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have him release Barabbas for them instead. Pilate spoke to them again, "Then what do you wish me to do with the man you call the king of the Jews?" They shouted back, "Crucify him." Pilate asked them, "Why? What evil has he done?" But they shouted all the more, "Crucify him." So Pilate, wishing to satisfy the crowd, released Barabbas for them. And after flogging Jesus, he handed him over to be crucified. Then the soldiers led him into the courtyard of the palace, that is, the governor's headquarters. And they called together the whole cohort, and they clothed him in a purple cloak. And after twisting some thorns into a crown, they put it on him, and they began saluting him, "Hail, King of the Jews!" They struck his head with a reed, spat upon him, and knelt down in homage to him. After mocking him, they stripped him of the purple cloak and put his clothes on him. Then they led him out to crucify him.
They compelled a passerby who was coming in from the country to carry his cross. It was Simon of Cyrene, the father of Alexander and Rufus. Then they brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of a skull, and they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it. And they crucified him and divided his clothes among them, casting lots to decide what each should take. It was 9 o'clock in the morning when they crucified him. The inscription of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." And with him they crucified two bandits, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by derided him, shaking their heads and saying, "Aha, you who would destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself and come down from the cross." In the same way, the chief priests, along with the scribes, were also mocking him among themselves and saying, "He saved others, he cannot save himself. Let the Messiah, the King of Israel, come down from the cross now, so that we may see and believe." Those who were crucified with him also taunted him. Please stand. When it was noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. At 3 o'clock, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of the bystanders heard it, they said, "Listen, he is calling for Elijah." And someone ran, filled a sponge with sour wine, and put it on a stick and gave it to him to drink, saying, "Wait, let us see whether Elijah will come and take him down." Then Jesus gave a loud cry and breathed his last. And the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. Now, when the centurion who stood facing him saw that in this way he breathed his last, he said, "Truly, this man was God's son." There were also women looking on from a distance. Among them were Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James the younger, and of Joses and Salome. These used to follow him and provided for him when he was in Galilee. And there were many other women who had come up with him to Jerusalem. Please be seated.
He has a name, you know. Not that anyone in that blood-hungry crowd cared. But his name is Dismas. I named him after my father. He is a good man. He died when Dismas was just a toddler. But right after the baby was born, my father came to visit. He was so proud to be his namesake. He sat me down and he said, "Tabitha, here is what I want you to remember. He is a boy. Take him to synagogue. Teach him the ways of our people. Most importantly, daughter, teach him of God, of justice, and mercy and humility." And I did. He was quite a good student, you know. He learned the books of the law by heart. He was a good boy, always looking out for the underdog. He never could stand to see someone being bullied. More than once, the rabbi came to talk to his father and me about how Dismas had shoved down a bigger boy or hit someone for picking on the smaller boys. I told him more than once that he had to remember to control his temper. He always said the same thing. "Remember, Mama, Proverbs says, speak up for the people who have no voice, for the rights of the down and outers." It was hard to argue with that, though I scolded him for his methods. As he got older, those methods got more extreme. These last few years, as the Romans have tightened their grip on the region, Dismas became more of a rebel. He let his anger get the best of him. I saw him less and less. He turned from the compassion and kindness to violence and retribution. And last week it caught up with him. The neighbor boy came running to tell me that Dismas had been arrested and was going on trial.
I hurried to the prefect's court and arrived just in time to hear the verdict.
Guilty of treason against the Roman government. I hadn't seen Dismas in months, but I threw myself in front of him and turned to face Pilate. I pleaded for him to have mercy. I tried to explain his motives. It did no good. He was sentenced to be crucified. This morning at Golgotha, my son carried his cross past me. Through tears, I told him I loved him. He told me he loved me and then said, "Remember, Mama, speak for the voiceless." And then the soldiers shoved me aside and led him to the top of the hill. I turned away as they carried out his sentence, but I couldn't leave. After a while, I looked at the scene on the hilltop. The man in the middle had been beaten bad, and the man on the other side of him was yelling vile insults. My son, my Dismas, even as he hung there in agony, spoke up. He said, "Can't you see this man is innocent?" My compassionate boy, denied mercy himself, he still found the strength to call for mercy for another. And then he spoke to the man on the middle cross, "Remember me when you come into your kingdom." The man in the middle, bloodied, bruised, struggling for every breath, turned his face toward my son. With great effort, he spoke, "Today, you will be with me in paradise." I don't know much about that man in the middle, but it seems Dismas might have. I've heard his name. I want to believe him. I want to believe he has the power to deliver my son into paradise. And maybe he can deliver me there as well. No, I don't want to believe. Savior, remember me.
When evening had come, and since it was the day of preparation, that is, the day before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, a respected member of the council, who was also himself waiting expectantly for the kingdom of God, went boldly to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then Pilate wondered if he were already dead, and summoning the centurion, he asked him whether he had been dead for some time. When he learned from the centurion that he was dead, he granted the body to Joseph. Then Joseph bought a linen cloth, and taking down the body, wrapped it in the linen cloth, and laid it in a tomb that had been hewn out of the rock. He then rolled a stone against the door of the tomb. Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, saw where the body was laid.